Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Must watch for Lonzo Ball.
It's just good to see. It'll be fun.
Come back and step on the court. That's a moment.
I'm very curious to see what he looks like. It's been so long.
Just happy, man. Full of joy. Happy to be back. Put the uniform on, go out there in front of the United Center fans. You know, miss them a lot. I miss my team a lot. So just to be out there and be available, you know, that means the world to me.
Checking in for the Chicago Bulls, number 2, Lonzo Ball.
A standing ovation here at the United Center for Lonzo Ball. His first action since January 14th of 2022. In the pass, left corner, Ball for 3. Bam! Welcome back to the NBA. Lonzo Ball with a 3-ball in the far corner. Williams to Lonzo Ball with a reverse up and good.
The big ball is back, baby.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Undefeated, never lost.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is a glorious Thursday, October 17th. It's Mitch's birthday.
Mitch's birthday. Happy birthday, boss. Happy birthday
to the man that stirs the drink, that runs the show, that pours the drink.
It feels like we should be waiting on him every hour, the way that he waits on everybody else and makes everybody else comfortable. It's his day. We should be taking every break and bringing him a coffee one break, bagel the next break.
Did we bring the – who's got the cake?
Who's in charge of that?
Hey, is that oven on? Dustin, call Shane. Tell him to get down here.
Shane's got a brisket in there.
He's gonna make a steak.
There's something in the crock pot too, I believe.
Happy birthday, Mitch.
Happy birthday.
Yes, Mitch. Happy
October 17th.
29.
30,
30,
whatever,
Mitch.
Happy birthday, buddy.
We love you dearly.
Yes, what a day.
Oh, that's
great. What a day. Good celebratory mood.
What a great way to start.
Yes.
It's a great way to start the show. We got a birthday. David's obsessed with birthdays. We know that.
I love birthdays. I think it's interesting that Mitch's birthday is just like probably 10 days after Javon Dexter's birthday that you were really celebrating.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when's Lonzo Ball's birthday?
Well, I mean, that was the coming out party. Surprise party.
Talk about a celebration.
That was fun.
Last night at the United Center, as we heard coming in, I did not see LeVar Ball around the United Center, but there was reason for celebration.
Yes.
Relief, a lot of joy, a lot of amazement, Mully. I think all of it applies. Lonzo Ball did something remarkable last night, and not just returning to the court, but returning to the court and looking like an NBA player.
Well, I mean, we'll get into it, but he finished with 6 points, 2 of 2 on his three-pointers. He had a rebound and an assist. He was limited. He played 15 minutes. The number is 16. He's going to be allowed to play 16 minutes.
Early.
For a while.
It depends on today. How does he wake up today?
That's true.
How does he feel? And I was interested. I saw a couple different references to this, that he had been experiencing soreness leading up to this.
Right.
Did not realize that going into the game.
Well, didn't he postpone? Wasn't he supposed to come back on like Monday and they moved it to Wednesday?
Well, I think there was some postponement in his return related to conditioning because before camp opened, he had a COVID setback. But I don't know if it was related to the soreness. Regardless of the case, when he entered the game last night, he got the standing ovation he deserved.
Great.
And it was great. You heard Chuck, the excitement in his voice. There was a buzz around the building for a preseason game, all because it was Lonzo Ball's first action in 33 months.
And the Bulls won the game, which I know no one cares. I know no one's watching. Is an entertaining team. They're running the floor. I'm enjoying watching preseason Bulls games, and I say that with full knowledge that I'm going to upset a certain friend of mine who doesn't get to watch them. And I'm trying to make an arrangement for you, pal.
Well, I think that the Bulls are entertaining for whoever can see them.
Yeah. Oh, I love
it. Seven players in double figures.
Yes.
They played the starters last night. Josh Giddey had 9 assists. Yeah. You see the way that he moves the ball and can run the floor.
It's Kobe's team, man. Kobe White.
Kobe White, very good. I was very interested in their rotation. You saw some veterans and Torrey Craig in there. And Io did not play. Julian Phillips did not play. Both guys are injured, but it's not serious. Matas Puzelis did not play. It's not considered to be serious. But those are three guys I wonder, not Io so much, but Phillips and Puzelis, how will they fit into the rotation? Because last night you're watching the Bulls and like, whoa, they got some talent.
Yeah, they got a pretty deep group, honestly.
I think you're starting to see the rotation now towards the end of preseason, the early rotation. Lonzo, if he plays like this, could fit into that nine-man rotation. Craig, Lonzo, Jalen Smith, and then Io. I think that's it. And if Io's out, then I think you see Talen Horton-Tucker because he looks good.
I like him.
He was one of those seven guys in double figures.
Yes.
Where did he come from, Brandon? He came from Utah, right? Last year he played with
Utah,
the Jazz.
Lakers. He got a championship with the Lakers. Local kid.
Pride of
kid
Simeon. Can play. Another Simeon product. He can help.
I'm glad he's on the team.
I don't know where he fits because, injuries happen. Attrition will be an issue. And Io has that definite role. I think that's a good way to put it, Brandon. You look at the veterans, and I do wonder, I wasn't counting Lonzo Ball in any rotation that I was concocting. But look at last night. Maybe we need to reconsider everything.
Well, I mean, it was great that he was back. He is now a perimeter player. Not that he wasn't a perimeter player, but that seemed especially underlined. At one point, he did jump into the bench, kind of at the end of the bench. There was crowd members, but it's really the bench. And he grabbed a ball and threw it back in behind his back. And he seemed to amaze himself to have just played basketball without thinking.
Looked a little surprised.
He looked surprised.
Looked mildly surprised.
That he had done that.
Yes, and also probably very, very satisfied that he's a part of that.
Yeah.
Again. And he felt like a basketball player. And he probably will wake up a little sore today and feel good about it in a way that he hasn't.
A good sore.
A good sore in a way that he hasn't felt in a very long time.
I like that.
So good night at the United Center.
Yeah, great stuff. Really good. And there's a big news with the other team owned by Jerry Reinsdorf.
Yes, there is.
There was a story in The Athletic yesterday. It's all over now everywhere, but it was about Jerry making moves, perhaps discussing a trade,
Not a trade.
A sale. Of the White Sox.
In active discussions.
He's in active discussions with a group led by Dave Stewart. Yeah, that Dave Stewart.
The same guy.
Oakland A's pitcher, bounced around, played a lot.
Tony La Russa's confidant. Tony La Russa's good friend, right? And so that makes sense that there would be a connection there. It was a major headline that broke around 4 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon. There's a lot to unpack there because there are a lot of tentacles to this story, as we know. And there are a lot of repercussions about what happens, about what would happen if this were to go further.
Yeah, we'll talk about it, what it means, you know, Dave Stewart, what he means, where he's at, what he's trying to get done. He once tried to buy the Oakland Coliseum with his partners, which is interesting. He once or is currently actively involved in trying to bring a women's soccer team to Nashville.
And as well as expansion baseball in Nashville. Let me rephrase that. Dave Stewart has been part of an ownership group that's trying to bring Major League Baseball to Nashville.
There you go.
Because I think that will
make
a lot more sense in the context of this story, because that will be a major concern if this is a story that has legs.
It's super curious that you are talking to that guy, given his connections to La Russa. I just wonder about that. If you were selling a Major League Baseball franchise, David, would you want to meet with a particular group, or would you want to find out who's got the most coin and who wants to pay the most for my team? How would you go about it?
Well, I think that I would want to get the, obviously, sell to the highest bidder.
Oh.
And I would want to have a lot of different people involved. The fact that this is the first report that we're hearing of somebody in active discussions, even though, for fairness to the story, the White Sox have said they do not comment and had no comment on rumors and unnamed sources. So, or stories that don't have named sources. That is their response to that. The statement was issued on Wednesday night to the Chicago Sports Network, and that is going to be their stance until they say anything else. But your point is a good one, because if the White Sox are indeed for sale, the fact that this is the first report of somebody who was interested, it gives you pause, because this is an ownership group that is interested in taking a franchise and relocating it to Nashville. Or some people have mentioned this. Dave Stewart,
yeah,
favored son of Oakland, bringing a team back to his hometown.
Yeah.
Which just lost the A's.
Yes.
So.
And I mean, I wouldn't do that to the poor people of Oakland. I think they deserve better in their lives, to go from the A's to the, what's going on right now with the White Sox. But stop. Let's not.
I'm trying to keep you on the tracks here.
I'm on the rails.
From your standpoint, I do think that there's obviously the sentiment all season long. You don't have to be an investigative reporter to understand that there's a movement that people would love to see the White Sox sold. The fan base, yes, would be in favor of this news. Yes. But as a Sox fan, when you see this news, are you encouraged by the fact that, oh boy, Jerry Reinsdorf might actually be selling the Sox? Or are you concerned about, oh boy, he's selling the Sox to somebody who might want to move the team?
See, it's a very interesting question, because if I were selling anything, and I mean like, you know, an old watch, I would first get on the horn and try to contact Jeff Bezos and find out if he likes old watches.
Or
baseball teams.
Or Amazon. Or Walmart. Know,
exactly.
Boeing.
Who has the most money?
Who's got the dough?
Hey, you want a baseball team. The very fact that it's not Apple working that way, yeah, would indicate to me, I don't know. And I mean, again, I am I'm just a guy who grew up on the South Side that follows the team. This is from no one in particular. I would wonder why. My first thought was, like, hadn't we talked about Andrew Berlin, or haven't we talked about just different people that
a
might,
local guy invested local guy, in the community who with, might with, I want to invest in the team and keep the team here.
That's what
the
I
Sox
thought.
The Sox belong on the South Side.
But I believe that. But I wonder, or in the near South Side, if they can get that thing going.
In the South Loop,
and
in the
I wonder, wherever. I wonder if that's
Chicago.
Connected. I wonder if that's connected.
Well, but by that you mean that the White Sox are in the midst of trying to persuade lawmakers, business people, that building on the patch of land known in the 78 is a good idea, a direction they want to head. They want to build a ballpark. There's a replica there now. They're giving tours. They've got a neighborhood party on October 20th to show people that patch of land and their vision.
Yeah.
Now, is this story, or this development in the story, related to that idea? Because
that does cross your mind.
That is also not just Jerry Reinsdorf, but any owner of any team might use the threat of selling a team to an ownership group that might move a team as a threat, or an implied threat, that, you know what? Well, we want our stadium, we want our ballpark, and if we don't get it, we might have to sell. And that is the implication.
I saw the wind blow off that stadium in St. Petersburg. Could the Sox move down there and get a new roof? That was the threat when they got the ballpark.
I know. What would their potential be if they had no roof on a stadium?
Well, maybe.
The
they
roof
don't have
is
a
the
roof
ceiling.
Now.
The they ceiling might, is the roof.
And maybe they leave it open-aired.
Now, that's one way to... I don't want to make light of that. They're going
through hell down there, and it's really
unfortunate.
I know.
But I know your point's well taken.
My point was about the last time they got a stadium deal, there was a threat to leave.
And I think that it bears repeating, and this is something we're going to continue to talk about. And then when we take calls, I can't speak for the people who will be calling in, but this isn't necessarily cynical or skeptical in talking about this in these terms.
Oh,
because
no.
When you're talking about professional sports and ownership groups – and stadiums and franchises moving, this is something that you have to put into context. The White Sox having a report in The Athletic that they're talking to an ownership group that wants to put a team in Nashville.
Yeah.
After reports almost a year ago, 10 months ago, that Jerry Reinsdorf had met with the owner, the mayor of Nashville. Yeah. You start to wonder. That's not being cynical. That's just following the breadcrumbs. Is he entertaining the idea of moving the White Sox or selling it to a group to move them to Nashville? I sure hope not. Gosh, I hope not.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder, what is the next play? What is the next ploy? And what will be the next headline?
Yeah. What's the name of the group in that owns the Twins, the Pullman family?
Polad,
excuse me. They are for sale. They've kind of announced they're for sale, and they're interested in talking to anybody that wants to buy a team, mm-hmm. right? They're not, there's no rush to try to move that team out of Minneapolis.
Is Dave Stewart talking to them?
Well, that was where I was going. Is he want to own a baseball team, or does he want to move a baseball team someplace? And I'm just curious how much that might cost, and are you stuck staying in Minnesota if you're doing that, and would that be okay with him?
Well, I do wonder about that, and as well as the relationship between Dave Stewart and Tony La Russa, Tony La Russa's proximity to Jerry Reinsdorf, and you wonder if that kind of coziness makes the White Sox more likely for him to have gone down the field or gone down this far in these negotiations, if they are existing, than the Twins, who I don't know that there's a relationship there.
No.
You know, business deals are about relationships.
That's what I was going to say. You know, you want to buy my team? We got a relationship.
Yeah.
You're a prospective buyer. But I would be curious to know what, and I don't know. You know, do you put a for sale sign on the team? How do you do that? Is this
very, very quietly?
Yeah. Is this a leaked piece of information, or are they happy that this?
Who would benefit from a leak? We talked about this yesterday, and we wondered about the value, because this is how these things work. The Athletic, this is the same reporter, Brittany Grawley, that was part of the, with Ken Rosenthal, wrote a very comprehensive takedown.
About the airplane.
Takedown of the White Sox, beginning with the image of the airplane. So you wonder about the motivation in letting this information out or making this information more known by whatever party did that. Because somebody did that.
Yeah.
Now, was it intentional? We can speculate, but I don't think we'll ever know. I don't know if it's in the White Sox best interest that this gets out, unless you are trying to create some leverage.
Yeah.
From the Dave Stewart ownership group, I would think that you would want this to get out because it would show that you're actively seeking a team and you're still making progress in your quest to bring a team to Nashville. There's a lot we don't know, but I'm curious from Sox fans when we start to take some phone calls, how they view and interpret this headline and this story. Good news or bad news? Welcome or feared?
Yeah, I think all of the above. It's a really good question. We will get to phone calls about it, but you know, the reaction from friends of mine, and it was like a shockwave went through people from the South Side, people that follow the White Sox. And the reaction was, you know, it was half celebratory, half fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, the idea that maybe you're moving to AAA would have been a real fear had there been relegation in the world.
Right.
But there isn't. So do you risk being happy about something that could see your team leave your and I mean, it makes you wonder about Jerry, about all the things he said about being a Brooklyn Dodgers fan and how that hit him when they moved. It makes you wonder about Dave Stewart. I believe he threw out the final pitch or the
at Oakland Coliseum.
At Oakland Coliseum,
yeah.
He threw the ceremonial.
And then
first
the A's
pitch
left.
And when they left, he was part of that was like a fan celebration saying goodbye to the team. And now he's going to what? Throw out a ceremonial first pitch?
There would be the ultimate irony if these two men that you just mentioned are involved with the White Sox leaving the city of Chicago after they were part of the two examples you just cited.
Yes.
I that would be cruel irony in a way, because you don't want to see that. And I do think this, and I certainly don't want to speak on behalf of White Sox fans. I'm just speaking to somebody who works here and has been here for a while. I think that regardless of how fed up you might be, Sox fans, with Jerry Reinsdorf, a Sox team in Chicago owned by Jerry Reinsdorf is better than a Sox team moving to Nashville under new ownership. You want two teams in the city. This is a baseball town, and you don't want to lose the White Sox.
Yeah. I wonder about that. I read somebody was speculating they could get some other team to move here. What would you do then? You would be the Baltimore Ravens?
It seems like a non-starter.
You hang on to the Cleveland history. It seems like
the Modell model is dead.
Exactly. I saw he's up for the Hall of Fame, by the way.
Did you see that?
What did you think?
I cringed.
If you were voting,
I don't know.
Is he ineligible because he moved that team?
That was my first reaction. It was almost like a visceral reaction. Like, what's his name doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
But I didn't know if that was an overreaction.
Yeah.
But I had the same kind of thing as you did. Like,
yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what he means? His name means to so many people in the sport.
It's so true, David. It sent like a little shiver through me. Like, oh no, you know,
really?
You couldn't vote for that. Could you vote for that? That's a tough one.
In that same story, Virginia McCaskey is also mentioned. You will hear her name as part of the conversation for a contributor to the Hall of Fame to be considered. There's several names on that list.
Yes. But that's the one that surprised me.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, that's a really big story. The potential sale of the White Sox, a big deal. The timing of it, very curious. Is it possible that he's had enough of this?
The letter said that he had a very difficult year enduring what happened, like everybody else watching.
Yes.
Last 2 years have been very hard.
Right.
For Sox fans. So we have Lonzo Ball's return, the White Sox big headline. Mully, tonight the Hawks open at home. I know you're interested in this because the Hawks open at the United Center. They're going to get the red carpet treatment. They play the San Jose Sharks and Macklin Celebrini.
That's my guy.
That's your guy.
That is, I believe I turned you on to him.
You
maybe
did.
A year
and
ago.
His debut, he had a goal and an assist, and I'm watching Celebrini highlights now.
Yeah. My daughter goes to Boston University, so. That's where he plays. She's already this year been to a hockey game. Isn't that wild?
Without him there?
They don't go to. Well, they still have a pretty good team.
They still have a pretty good team.
But without him there. He showed up just for the game. They let him play just for old time's sake. Because he is, how old is he? He's a young lad.
He's got to be 19, 18, 19.
Yeah. Young guy.
It's coming in hot.
Yep, there you go. All right, we've got the pick six. You know some of the ideas we're going to be talking about because we just talked about them. We're going to break down all the big stories of the day. We'll have some fun with that. And that is next on the Mully and Haw Show.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Were you shocked to read the White Sox chairman Jerry Reinsdorf open to selling the team and has had active discussion with a group led by former MLB pitcher Dave Stewart? What does that mean in terms of the White Sox potentially leaving Chicago? Stewart has tried to buy the Oakland Coliseum in the past, currently trying to bring a women's soccer team to Nashville. Is this just the beginning of a process? How long will it take?
Oh, I think this is the beginning. I don't know that it's going to happen. But I think the preliminary talks would just be the beginning. I would hope that there, if indeed the White Sox are for sale, if indeed they are actively pursuing it, I would hope there will be a lot of groups that would be involved in it that would want to come in and do something with the White Sox and keep the White Sox in Chicago. And I would hope that that would be a priority for whatever you do. I think it's curious to me. Dave Stewart, I don't know enough about Dave Stewart. I don't believe he's the guy with the deep pockets. So I think we'd have to find out where the money is. You know, sometimes people come in and it looks like there's a partnership and it turns out that one guy actually was the moving force of the whole thing all along. And that's a reference to back in 19, was it 81 when Jerry bought the team with his partnership group for about $20 million? Look, you know, they're what are they worth? $2.5 billion?
About that.
So, yeah. I mean, there are not many people that have that kind of coin. But it's a big town, Chicago, if indeed they're selling. And I will say, you know, Jerry on many occasions, multiple occasions anyway, has said that that the Sox will be under his ownership until he shuffles off this mortal coil, and that Michael Reinsdorf has been instructed to sell the team at that point. So I've kind of operated under that belief all along, and this is obviously altering that. So I don't know that's what will happen here. I don't know how far along this sort of thing is. But if you are actually selling a $2.5 billion product, don't you want to know if you can get $3 billion for it? Isn't there someone out there that's got $2.7 billion? What's the difference between 2.6 versus 2.5? That's a ton of money.
A lot of money.
A ton of money. So I have a hard time believing that you would just have secret negotiations and sell the team, and I hope that's not the case.
Well, it's a hell of an investment, that's for sure. His group did a great job over the last 40 years. I thought that was interesting, too, hearing that this is the second longest owned franchise in baseball behind the Steinbrenner family.
Steinbrenner family, the White Sox, and then the Twins.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Now, the Twins, the difference there is they have a fairly new stadium also, mm-hmm. so I don't think the Twins are, you know, they can't use that as leverage. You know, maybe this is a big game of chicken, right? But to be clear, this is Chicago. I want Chicago to have two baseball teams. It means something to have an American League and a National League team in your city. That means you're big time. So I don't want the Sox to go anywhere. It's just a question of, you know, could Jerry's group say, listen, we're open to, we're all yours. We're all yours. But the first five years you own it, you can't leave. Like something like that to kind of ensure at least Sox fans have that long to have the team. Because and let's be honest, we brought this up in the first segment. You guys brought this up in the first segment. Would you want, if you were to lose the Sox, would you then want another city to lose their team so that you could have a new team? Would that pacify people? I don't think so. I don't think that's a way to go about it. So this is big business. That's what this is. And I think I don't think Jerry's calling people. I think Jerry's sitting there and taking calls and taking meetings on this topic.
And they might be aggressively seeking it. Dave Stewart is part of a potential ownership group called Music City Baseball, formed several years ago, including real estate developer John Lohr, former U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, Negro Leagues Baseball Museum President, our guy Bob Kendrick, and get this, former Titans running back Eddie George. So this is the group.
Love Eddie.
Love Eddie George, great actor.
Eddie came into the studio.
Great singer.
Gave me tickets.
Wasn't that awesome?
To Chicago.
We love Eddie George.
He performed in it.
Keep him in Chicago. But there's a very much a Nashville vibe to that ownership group. And so you wonder about the inclusion there. But I do think, big picture, let's look at what's going on here in the city of Chicago and hope the White Sox stay here. This was shocking yesterday in terms of the headline that it was out there, that it just appeared on the Athletics website. They broke the story. It also, though, is in conjunction with what's going on in as the White Sox try to convince people that building on the patch of land in the South Loop, known as the 78 at Clark and Roosevelt, 62 acres there, is going to be part of a $9 billion investment into the city of Chicago. That, to me, if you're talking about seven of that $9 billion being private investment, there's still some public subsidies that would be part of that. I wonder, Mully, and this may be a broader debate, is that more likely to happen than, say, the Bears building on the South Lot? And is this part of that, I don't want to say leverage ploy, but it certainly gives you reason to wonder, boy, if it's either building on the South Lot, or I'm sorry, the South Loop, a White Sox stadium as part of this investment, $9 billion investment in the city, or losing the White Sox, I think you want to get building. You want to get shovels in the ground. I mean, so you understand the impetus if this is all part of that conversation. We're speculating. That's all we can do right now. The White Sox are denying it. But I think there's a lot more information to learn. There's a lot of things that we don't know. How long will it take? Well, I think it's going to take a while, especially if you're talking about them staying in Chicago, because it would. I think if they stay in Chicago, we're going to be talking about a new ballpark.
Who's the money behind the 78? Isn't there some
related to Midwest?
Yes. So do they have an extra $2.5 billion if they need an anchor tenant?
I don't know.
Should they be talking about?
They need an anchor tenant. So they don't want to lose the White Sox.
So why not buy the White Sox if Dave Stewart's going to do it?
The White Sox are, according to Forbes, valued at $2.05 billion, according to the latest valuation. It's a good question.
I'm not going to take any questions.
What is more likely to happen? The White Sox announced this offseason plans to build on the plot of land called the 78 in the South Loop, or the White Sox announcing plans to sell the team to a group led by Dave Stewart. How realistic is either option?
Well, this is the big question. I don't know that we can answer that today. I think we could just guess. These are educated guesses. Offseason, this is a big offseason for the White Sox in terms of what they're doing with their roster, their minor league roster in a major league division. They have a lot of ground to cover there. That's the baseball part of it. The business part of this is that they have I think if they had their druthers, they would get the stadium deal approved in the South Loop, begin moving in that direction, and that would be probably take the sale of the team off the table, unless Dave Stewart were interested, or this group were interested in keeping it in the city. And I suppose that could be conceivable. It doesn't seem likely. It doesn't seem likely only because of the people that Dave Stewart so far has been aligned with. I just told you who that was. The name of the group is the Music City Baseball Group. So are they going to pivot now and set their sights on keeping a team or buying a team and keeping it in Chicago? There's so much what we don't know. It would be great to line up Bob Kendrick to talk to him about what he might think about all this. I think it's important, too, to point out that Jerry Reinsdorf is looking at and talking to people surrounding this yesterday. They were surprised, but they also, when they heard it was Dave Stewart, Jerry Reinsdorf, I think, would like to sell, if he does sell, to a minority-led ownership group. That's what the criteria this would meet. But to pick one or the other, to say which one is more likely, we would just be guessing. But right now, that's all we're really left to do.
Well, how about this? Let's throw a little fly into the ointment. Mully, you talked about the team getting up to $3 billion potentially. What's the cost of the 78? Why can't Jerry Reinsdorf and his group buy the 78, much like the Bears bought Arlington Heights, and now have that in their back pocket to either eventually, or does that make they never even have to break ground. Now they have a place for the new owner. We own the land. We own this great spot for you, new owner, to do this. And how much is this Dave Stewart, Tony La Russa relationship involved in all of this? What's that connection? I'm sure there's got to be something. Don't tell me there's nothing there. There's got to be something there. So, hey, how about the White Sox buy the 78 and just sit on it and say, okay, here, now we want $3 billion for this franchise.
Yeah, they can't do that. The 78 is owned. That all that land is owned by Related Midwest.
But Everything's for sale, right? Isn't everything for sale? If everybody's got a price?
I don't know. I don't know that is for sale, and I don't know that that's a realistic option for them to do that, or to go somewhere else, wherever that might be, and try to put some sort of a plan together. Listen, I don't want the Sox to leave Chicago. It was weird last night, because the story broke, and then I was talking to my wife and my daughter. My daughter's like, well, what baseball team will we follow? And my wife's like, well, we'd become Tigers fans. I'm like, because she's from Detroit.
And what was your face was like?
I'm like, well, whatever happens, we're not Tigers fans. It was pretty funny. But we did. It was a real dilemma, and I sat there just for a few minutes contemplating, what would I do? What do you do? You hear these stories about people losing their team and never following them again. And, you know, I had a friend of mine whose dad was a Chicago Cardinals fan, and they left, and he became kind of He was kind of a Bear fan, but I think there was a hesitation somehow, and he also was aware of everything that the Cardinals were doing, even though they were long gone from Chicago and twice removed. So, yeah, I would hate to have that happen. I would hate to, it would drive me crazy. You know what's funny is, like, I'm going to Boston this weekend. There, it is, they are the Sox. And, you know, it's the Shy Sox, or, you know, like we call them the Bo Sox.
The Bo Sox.
Yeah. They think of themselves as just the Sox, and they're not. It's weird.
And that's the big question, right?
Big time, 7 o'clock. What's your reaction to the Bears tight end Cole Kmet being named the NFC Special Teams Player of the Week after serving as an emergency long snapper after Scott Daly went down with a knee injury in London during the Bears' 35-16 victory over Jacksonville? Kmet had 5 successful snaps on 5 extra points, 2 of which he had a role in as scoring the touchdown, catching those passes. Can you believe he's the first ever long snapper to win the honor?
That is absolutely, first of all, it's hysterical that this has happened. Big Z wrote a story about it where he talked to Patrick Manley. Pat Manley is probably the greatest long snapper in league history, and he did it forever. And this is the first long snapper to ever get this particular award. It just tells you how much we don't appreciate long snappers. And how much a guy being an emergency fill-in, and you know what else is hilarious? Is Cairo Santos said it after the game. We talked about it the next morning. He said he's going to be the special teams player of the week. And sure enough, he is. And he isn't just the special teams player of the week. He's the first ever long snapper to win the award. That's insane. That is insane. But it's really amusing. I got a kick out of it. I thought it was funny. I can't think of anybody that did anything spectacular that would be miffed because you had a guy that came in as an emergency replacement. I mean, I'm not capable of breaking down every snap and saying that one was slightly higher than that should have been, etc. I'm glad they didn't have to punt, and I'm glad that that Daly seems like he's going to be okay. And they have a guy on the practice squad now who can fill in.
I think it's a joke, and I like Cole Kmet. I mean, Cole Kmet has been the topic of very spirited debates on this very show, is being drafted by the Bears because of where he came from. Now, if you would have put the punt in, if you would have snapped punts, I think maybe now we could have a conversation. Well, why not name him the offensive player of the week and throw in the fact that he did what he did on special teams? Like, throw that part into the reason we gave him offensive player of the week. I mean, it went to a running back from the Buccaneers that probably nobody's ever heard of before until, you know, he had a nice day, don't get me wrong, but I mean, how many people knew who Sean Tucker was prior to last week's game when they played against the Saints, who don't play a lick of defense? So this is a mark on it. It's you said amusing. Yeah, it's amusing. It's laugh out loud. It's a joke.
I kind of agree. I think that there were also some quarterbacks who deserved offensive player of the week consideration, that Sean Tucker, with due respect to the Tampa Bay running back, they scored 51 points and amassed 590 yards and all the things, but I don't know that that was better than Jared Goff. Heck, Caleb Williams had a claim to, if he wanted to make that argument.
Well, he won an award, David.
What was
Caleb,
that?
Caleb, he won the FedEx Air Award.
That's great. That's great. There are a lot of awards to give out. This one's kind of silly. Cole Kmet getting this award seems kind of like tongue-in-cheek. Ha, ha, ha. Dude, we're going to do this week. Patrick Manley should be insulted.
Oh, my God.
Every kicker in the NFL should be insulted. I think 5 snaps, and the 2 of them were high, according to Flusi. So, yeah, you know, we can talk about what a great team guy he is and being able to do this in a pinch and emergency long snapper, and it's very amusing and it's a great story, but I don't think they give awards for that. If they did, boy, every week we'd have a new nomination.
So has this award spoiled the story? The great day that Kmet had,
no.
Now that he's honored for it,
no.
It's ruined.
No, I think it just makes me wonder if Frank Kmet was on the committee.
No, it's a valid question, certainly on the minds of a lot of people.
That's the voice of Casey Johnson. He'll be here with the guys at 7:40. What was your takeaway from Lonzo Ball's first appearance with the Bulls in 33 months? How did you feel when you heard he's going to be on a 16 minutes time limit for the foreseeable future? It's obviously a feel-good story, but is it a sustainable one?
I'm going to say this morning, that I am no longer going to declare anything about Lonzo Ball in terms of what he can't do or what we should ignore. I watched last night and I realized that I never expected to see what I was watching. And good for him. I hope that he considers that a triumph. Cartilage transplant surgery is something that no other NBA player has overcome to the extent that he has overcome. Now, there are other examples of other comebacks that we talked about yesterday. There's an NHL player, Gabriel Landeskog, for the Colorado Avalanche, coming back from a similar surgery. He's not as far along as Lonzo Ball, but he's watching every move. Dr. Brian Cole did both surgeries, and he's got to feel like $1 million this morning. What we saw last night with Lonzo Ball playing effectively in an NBA game, preseason or not, is remarkable, is amazing. And it will check me. I am not going to question how far he can come or go with this moving forward. He played 15 minutes last night. If he can play 15 minutes in an NBA game during the regular season on a semi-regular basis and help the Bulls, then I think we should only stand up and applaud or privately just marvel at his success rate and what he has been able to accomplish. So is it sustainable? Boy, I hope so.
I hope so as well, David. The other thing is that he made some threes. Bulls need to make threes. They got one more three than the Timberwolves last night. I know it's a preseason game, but they needed that one more three, and he can shoot that shot. So good for him. Good story. And he's got me watching preseason NBA basketball. I never thought I'd do that.
I find this kind of a difficult thing to talk about. The 16-minute time limit is I don't like it. It means that you're and the way they're doing it, that like the plan was to go, you know, four different 4-minute stints. So he can come at, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of when Michael Jordan came back from his surgery in year two or whatever his leg
85.
Was. It was his second year with the team. And they were battling to try to make the playoffs. And Jordan would come in and just play his rear end off. He'd be running up and down the court. He'd be doing everything. And they would get close, and then they pull him out of the game because he was so frustrated. I just don't know. I mean, I think it's the wise thing to do with this particular. It's hard to talk about it. I felt that he was somewhat tentative. I felt that he is now a perimeter player, and he used to be a different player than that. I think maybe like when you saw him go get that ball out of bounds, maybe this is the sort of thing that will build up and that we'll see change. Is it sustainable? It's a great question. And I'm all here for it, and I hope to God it is sustainable, and I hope he can play for years to come. I have no idea. As you say, no one has ever attempted to come back from an injury like this. We were hard-pressed to find any feel-good stories that took place after 33 months. That there are 36 months in 3 years, for the love of God. So it's extraordinary the amount of time that he's missed. And it's great that he got back on the court and he got a standing ovation. You feel good for the guy. But I think it's an impossible question as to what happens next. I like that you don't want to comment. You want to stay out of it. But I mean, I'm not going to tell the guy what he can and can't do in his life. I just wonder if this is ultimately going to work out. It's just a question you have to contemplate.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
Besides Lonzo Ball, what else stood out about Wednesday night's preseason game against the Timberwolves? How concerned are you about the injuries that keep mounting on players trying to be part of the rotation? Do the Bulls have a good or a bad?
The Bulls are fun to watch, man. They scored 125 points. They were up and down the floor. They were jacking up threes. They won the game. I mean, it, you know, the entertaining style that they play was fun. It was fun to see. I don't know how the rotation is going to work because you have a starting five, and then you, with a guy like Billy, it's usually there are four players. You don't want to go much deeper than that because there's not enough time for everybody. I don't know how you're limiting who the four are. I don't know if you're going to have to monitor weekly practices to figure that out. But you usually settle in on a particular group. The strength of this team is that they got like three different groups. So I am going to be really curious to see who they limit, who they pick, and I just think it's a fascinating story. I love that they're wide open and running like hell. I think that's fun. They're younger. Will any of this matter when the regular season starts and guys are playing minutes after minutes and they're giving calls to guys? You know, Edwards was complaining yesterday he didn't get a couple of calls. He'll get those when the regular season starts.
Talen Horton Tucker
is a good player.
That's what stood out to me last night, watching more preseason basketball than I ever thought I would. Talen Horton Tucker. Let's see what these injuries are. Listening to the pregame last night, they talked about the injuries. Heard some Casey Johnson reports. It does nothing's like catastrophic. It more sounds like aches and pains and getting in shape. So let's see who plays Friday. Let's see how guys wake up today coming off that game. Who plays on Friday? That kind of thing. I'm not worried about the injuries yet, but who stood out to me? Talen Horton Tucker.
You're talking about injuries to Io, to Julian Phillips, and maybe Bezelis. Those are the three guys you wonder how they fit in. We know Io will be part of the rotation. You wonder if Talen Horton Tucker will. As he played his way in, he had 17 points. That was a good sign. What stood out to me was the Bulls had seven guys in double figures, seven guys who could fill it up, and they hit 18 of 41 threes. We thought 50 threes again? No. They only needed 41, but they hit 18 of them. So they shot at a higher clip from three-point range, which allowed them to play at the pace they desire, and Billy Donovan had to be thrilled because the Timberwolves were jacking up threes too. They didn't hit as many as the Bulls did, but the Bulls, if that is their style, then they're going to need people to knock them down those shots, and Lonzo Ball in 10 to 15 minutes can come in and hit a couple threes and space the floor, if you will. So I thought the Bulls were entertaining last night. I don't know if it means anything because it is only preseason, but they had to be very, very encouraged by the showing.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Do you think the Cub fans would rather see Anthony Rizzo win a pennant and maybe a World Series with the Yankees, or would they resent the fact that one of their favorite Cubs is making history with another team? How conflicted are your feelings?
Wow. I just wondered that watching him the other night get a double, celebrate on the base paths, and think, well, if this is game seven and Anthony Rizzo gets the big hit and the Yankees celebrate and make history, how are you going to feel about Anthony Rizzo? Because he's going to have another one of those legacy moments. He's, you know, if he catches the last out, is he going to put the ball in his back pocket? And then he's going to have something else as a souvenir. Does he put it on top of the Cub baseball in his mantle? Or does he put it below it? Where would it rank in his mind at this stage of his career? When he's hobbling along, hasn't had a great year? As a Cub fan, you're very conflicted, I think. Or are you? I would be happy for Anthony Rizzo, but I would think that the first time you won would be the most special time. But I think that might be wishful thinking and projecting. I'm not quite sure how he would answer that, but I would be very curious. So I guess overall happy for him.
Yes, happy for him, believe it or not. I have no problem with that at all. I mean, all of these guys overall have not been good. I mean, he's the only one that's been okay.
No conflict?
No conflict at all.
Wow.
Sorry to disappoint.
I'm a little disappointed.
Sorry.
I thought you were filled with conflict.
Well, that's not the question.
Oh. I just heard you say no conflict at all. I thought it was really funny. Did you see this bullpen coach guy's name is Mike Harkey?
Yeah.
He was saying that they were in the bullpen. He gets really tense, and everybody's sitting there, and you're watching the game, and when the phone rings, everyone jumps.
In the fourth inning.
In the fourth inning.
Yeah.
Rizzo calls every game, and he has to go yell at him. He's like, they're like, why does he call? And he's like, because he's playing with the phone. He likes to play with the phone. There's something about having fun in baseball. It's something about, like, the kid's game, like, I'm going to make a great call in the bullpen, that is just delightful to me. I like this story with Anthony Rizzo. I think it's amazing how many of those ex-Cubs didn't do anything after they left, and how many Hall of Fame Cubs were on that team, right? How many guys who you thought were Hall of Famers went on to Hall of Fame careers? So I don't think Anthony Rizzo is a Hall of Famer, but I don't think they win that World Series without him. I think he was a very important player in that particular stretch. And I think that if he can win one as a older player, you know, hanging on and battling back, I think it'd be great. And it would really top off his career in a wonderful way. And I respect you.
Well played.
All right, we got the extra point next. It's Molly and Haw on the Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Molly and Haw on 670 The Score.
What is the biggest NFL game of the weekend, and how will we feel when Molly returns on Monday and we take a look at the NFC North standings?
Well, I think that it's a good way to look ahead now, so you can start to ponder some of these bets you're going to place, because you're going to Vegas, right?
No, I'm not going to Vegas.
So I think when you look at Week 7, it's very intriguing, because you've got the game of, I think, the week in the NFC North. You've got the Lions going to Minnesota to play the Vikings. And I think the Vikings are unbeaten, but I don't know that they're going to stay unbeaten. Lions, even without Aiden Hutchinson, they have begun to play at a level that I think is difficult to match, especially offensively. They're doing things offensively that just make you say, wow. You watch them with a smile, and Ben Johnson keeps getting smarter every Sunday. I think they go into Minnesota and they win, and the Vikings come back to earth a little bit, and that begins the process where maybe by the time the Bears see the Vikings look a little different. I think the Vikings are the team to watch in terms of coming back down. Maybe the Sam Darnold phase is over. Maybe that's all wishful thinking here in Chicago. Don't know. But I think the Lions win that game. And the Packers. Look at the Packers, because they got the Texans coming to town. CJ Stroud and company go into Lambeau, and they travel well. Their edge rushers travel well. That's going to be difficult for the Flower and Jordan Love. I don't know if the Packers can beat the Texans, even at home. So we could be looking at the Bears gaining ground in the division without moving a finger, without doing anything except for watching everyone else play. Also, a couple other good games. Boy, the Chiefs and 49ers, that looks like fun. Super Bowl rematch. And, of course, will Russ start over Justin Fields?
Looks like it.
Will Aaron Rodgers find Devontae Adams? Jets Steelers is going to be must-see TV. Good weekend of games.
This sets up absolutely perfectly for the Bears. They go into their bye with a win, despite injuries. So hopefully after the long trip back home, they all catch a break, get their mind and their bodies right. So you've got a game in the noon window, and it's Detroit and Minnesota. The DVR is going to be fired up in case there's any honeydews on the list. And then you get a Super Bowl rematch, Chiefs 49ers in the 3:25 window. And then in the evening, I hate Sunday night football, but I'll stay up for as long as I possibly can. Jets, Steelers. I mean, it's a great day of football.
Yeah, I you know, what's funny is I think of it a little differently. I think the Packers are going to win at home against the Houston Texans, because I think Green Bay is coming around. The quarterback now has some games under his belt. He's playing better, and I think that they'll take care of business at home. I also think that the Vikings have a real good situation with the Lions coming in. I think that the Vikings, with Brian Flores as the defensive coordinator, are going to be okay against that offense. And I am fascinated to see how damaged they are without Hutchinson, how that impacts them, if that impacts them. I think the Vikings could win that game. And I will be really curious to see if the Lions start to take a step back because their defense isn't as good as you thought it was going to be. I always felt like Hutchinson, you know, a guy's a defensive player of the year candidate, and he's the kind of – he's their pass rusher. I'm not sure they're going to get a lot of pass rush without him. I'm not sure they're going to be as good without him. I'm very curious to see how that works out. The quarterback's fine, right? They said that he's playing and there's no problem. Sam Darnold, they were worried about him. But I feel like maybe the getting back and being able to win without their guy might be a problem. He's a really good player.
So you think it could be a bad weekend for the Bears if the Lions, if the Vikings go 6-0, and the Packers beat the Texans? I guess you flip the script and they are watching and probably not liking that, because that means the division is probably even better than we're saying right now.
I think the division might be better than we realize.
Interesting.
I think the Vikings, they've got a lot, and they it's almost like they have two different fiefdoms. They got a really good offensive coach and his group, and they got Brian Flores doing his thing. I think they're good, man. I really do. And I think that, you know, what they did is they replaced players pretty effortlessly, and it looks pretty good from what I've seen.
I think I still have doubts about Darnold.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's fair. Probably not based on his performance through five games, but I still have doubts about him, and I expect them to be the team that probably encounters more struggle down the road.
Yeah, and if he doesn't, they got a real problem in the division. Right?
Yes, they
I'm
do.
I'm just saying.
Yes, they do. Then the Bears have probably a
that's
good...
That's what I mean.
Could have a winning record and end up in fourth place.
Jeez. All right, we got your calls next. 312-644-6767. Where are you at, Sox fans? What do you think of this this rumor? Is there any meat on that bone? Do you look at it and you wonder if it's real? Or do you say to yourself, hey, this is going to change. Things are changing.
And was anybody at the United Center last night and saw Lonzo Ball up close and personal? What'd you think?
Did he say anything to you? No.
Sure. Did you see LeVar anywhere?
He said something to you. All right. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Well, if I were a fan, I'd be pissed. I'd be very angry.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I don't know the context of that, but that's Jerry Reinsdorf.
Not sure, but a lot of fans might feel conflicted. We talked about what's the big headline, White Sox in active discussions with selling the team to a group led by Dave Stewart, who has been part of a group wanting to bring baseball to Nashville. And with a Sox fan, do they view this as good news because they want Jerry Reinsdorf to sell the team, has been the familiar refrain through a very long season? Or do you fear the Sox leaving Chicago if that is the case? I think both reactions would be valid and understandable.
312-644-6767. We'll start with Jimmy. Jimmy is in Naperville. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I just want the Sox to stay in the Chicago area. And Reinsdorf had that vision. He wanted to move them to DuPage County in the 80s. We wouldn't even be talking about this had he gotten what he wanted then.
Yeah.
The plan is Pritzker and Ken Griffin, two billionaires, team up, buy the team. And when the Bears move to Arlington Heights, they move the Sox to Soldier Field.
Wow. That's
can he do that? I mean, listen, Pritzker has the money.
Yeah, I don't know he's shown any interest in doing that. I'm not sure he would want to look at that as a good investment.
I just mean, like, if he's the governor and they're asking him for a stadium and he says no, but I'll buy your team.
I don't know, Molly. That's not something I've really.
But I've just
that sounds like a fantasy football trade.
But is that know? I'm saying is that like legal? Is that are there any rules?
Can politicians?
Yes.
I think there would be some conflicts of interest that would be inherent because of the public private ownership and the funding for any said stadium or proposed stadium. If the White Sox are moving the stadiums out of Guaranteed Rate Field, I think the South Loop at Clark and Roosevelt is where they are eyeing, not Soldier Field.
I love the idea, though, that the guy says to him, he says, no, you don't get a dime, but I'll buy your team.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold on a second.
No.
Bears? No. You can't have any lakefront stadium. No dome. Boom. And then, okay, I'll give you 2.5. Okay.
Your quest for public funding is a non-starter.
Yeah.
But I would like to buy your team for $3
billion. Yeah. Bears? Hello?
No.
Oh, you're building in Arlington Heights?
Goodbye.
That's fine. I'll talk to the people at Soldier Field.
Arlington Heights, fine.
And then he moves his team in there. Like, you can't do all that. I don't know. Good to be king.
It would be great to be king.
Mike is in Glencoe. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, fellas. And something that we're missing in the conversation is the impact on the team on the field and in the front office. When you let it leak that you're selling the business, people say, why am I sticking around? And I think you're going to find it's increasingly hard for the White Sox, certainly, to attract a competent manager to keep players. No one's going to come here. And I wonder what people in the front office think. Why am I sticking around? Is Brian Bannister want to stay around? Because Dave Stewart wants to buy a team so he can run it and ruin it like he and La Russa ruined the Arizona Diamondbacks. So this is the other aspect of this. And Jerry Reinsdorf needs to come out publicly today and say, here's the plan. If not for the players, if not for the people in the front office, for the hot dog vendor, the beer vendor, the people who work at the ballpark who have worked there for 40 years, they deserve to know what's going on too.
Yeah,
thanks, Mike.
It's a good call, Mike. I think you will find that the people that work for Jerry Reinsdorf feel a real sense of loyalty toward him. He has engendered that with most of the people who work for him. I don't think
I would agree with that. And I respect where Mike is coming from, but I think there's some projection going on there because I think that maybe the frustration that he feels as a Sox fan, based on the people that we know that work for the White Sox, perhaps, and maybe they don't have the same level of frustration a lot of Sox fans feel.
No.
They have more of a belief or a loyalty to a guy who has been loyal to them.
Well, they feel frustration. And
totally.
I think what's happening isn't good, but I think they feel that it's going to work or that they feel a loyalty. They feel a kinship with Jerry. He engenders that with everyone who works for him.
And sometimes with struggling franchises, the opposite is true, Mike, not to be a contrarian here, but I do believe that guys like Brian Bannister, guys in the front office like Chris Getz, they're looking at what's going on with the struggling team as an opportunity to assert their own, have their own imprint on this revival or rebuilding or whatever it is. So it might struggle attracting players because of that, but I don't know if I agree that it's going to infect the entire organization in a way that makes them want to leave because this is a news story.
Let's try Jeff. Jeff's on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. First off, I hope you got your baked goods, and I hope they served you well.
We need to thank you separately and profusely.
Yeah, that was spectacular. That was honestly the treats that you sent were unbelievable.
You're very talented in the kitchen.
And the cracker things you made for me.
The pecan pie was magical.
I don't know how you got all that flavor in it.
Thank you, Jeff. It was
miraculous. Excellent.
It's magic. If only I pitched as well as I make food, I'd be in the majors. I feel like we're playing a 6 degrees of separation with Tony La Russa every time we talk about White Sox stuff. I mean, it's like he's involved with everything. I'm wondering now, correct me if I'm wrong, when the Bulls went down to Nashville for practice or training, isn't that when Reinsdorf met with the mayor
there? It was the owner's meetings.
Yes.
He was down there for the owner's meetings, and he turned up at the mayor's office.
Yeah.
Now I'm wondering if, I don't know, they probably would have said if any of the ownership group from Nashville would have been involved with that, if they would have seen them going in with Jerry, or if the mayor maybe represented that ownership group and they were talking, or vice versa, Jerry was talking with that ownership group to the mayor. But I'm looking at it as, why wouldn't he sell now? Because if he sells, he's not going to look like the bad guy if they move out, because it's going to be this ownership group that moves him out.
Well, I mean, Jeff, God bless you and thank you for the call. And we ought to get to a break. But if he sells to a group that moves the team, that's him moving the team.
That's a legacy move and decision. I don't know that he wants that to be part of his legacy. And I hope that he doesn't, because I think Chicago needs two baseball teams and the Sox belong on the South Side.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a rough one. All right. It's Mully and Haw. We've got the
Bigs time.
We got the Bigs. We got Brad Biggs next. Mully and Haw on the score.